Okay, so we'll get started with the lecture then. We've sort of done the basics of queuing in that we have examined our MM1 queue and we've looked at both transient and static modes for that and seen what sort of information we can gather. So today we're going to look, and I guess we've also looked at MMC queues. So if you have more sort of multiple server queues as well. Today we're going to look at two separate topics, so take the break between the topics. And those are networks of queues. So again, if you think, say, of routers in sort of large-scale network, then you're moving from one station to the next to the next. And so that forms a network where the output of one queue is forming at least part of the input to another queue. Okay. And again, we'll look at a few cases where it's relatively simple to say at least a small amount about that type of network. And then, again, so that's one topic. The second topic, we'll be looking at MG1 queues, so queues now with a general service time distribution, so not a Poisson service time distribution. Okay. And we'll see that, again, there's certain results we can derive for these queues, but they're not as simple as the Poisson service distribution, mainly because you lose that memoryless property, and that makes dealing with it more complicated. Okay, so the first thing we're going to look at again are these networks of queues, and so we are going to look solely at queues where we have Poisson inter-arrivals and Poisson service time distributions. And so, again, the idea is that the departures from one queue become the, at least feed into the arrivals for other queues. Okay. Now, the systems that we're interested in, essentially, the work comes from the outside of the system. So the system itself isn't generating this work, but rather you have, again, users on the outside which are sending work into the network. Okay. So at any point, again, the work at any given station is composed of stuff from outside and stuff fed around the network. Okay. So, again, the type of networks we're interested in, these ones where work is coming from externally, are called open networks. Okay. So, we assume that our work is arriving from outside and that ultimately it will depart again. Okay, so what goes in will eventually go out. Okay, the contrast to that would be a closed network where you would have a fixed number of jobs that would just cycle around the network. Okay, and this closed network can be used to model some types of computer systems, but for networks, again, we assume that we have open networks. Okay. So we have these collections of nodes, and one of two things can happen. It can be acyclic, which means that customers visit a node at most once, or cyclic, meaning they can cycle around in the network visiting nodes multiple times. Okay. Again, we're going to assume usually that even if it's cyclic, eventually everything's going to leave. But that is an assumption. Okay, and what turns out is that acyclic networks are fairly straightforward and to deal with. Cyclic networks are a little bit more complex, but if we add a few assumptions about how they're behaving, like things are leaving eventually, then they're actually not too horrible to deal with. Okay. So, again, the networks we want are acyclic, and we can represent them as directed graphs, so each circle or state is a node or queue, and we can see that if the arrow is going into the node, that means arrival, and if it's exiting the queue, then or the node, then that's a departure, and the departure of one becomes the arrival, possibly for another. Ultimately, at some point, there are exits from the system. Okay. So in the first case, wherever you go in, you're going to follow some path through the system and exit only visiting a node once. In the second example, we've flipped this one arrow, and what we see is we've created cycles, so you can visit your nodes more than once. Okay, so we're going to start again with the easiest case possible, and that's an acyclic network. And the easiest case of an acyclic network is if we have two queues, one feeding into the second. Okay. And so our first queue, we're assuming, is MM1. So Poisson arrival process, Poisson service process. We also assume that we have a Poisson service process for the second queue. And so the first question we might ask is, well, what's the arrival process into the second queue? It's obviously the same as the departure process. Okay. We can say something about, we know the average. We know if we have a rate of lambda going in, then we have a rate of lambda going out, so we know the mean service time, but we don't know the distribution for that. Okay. We're going to assume, again, we have infinite queue lengths. And we have a Poisson arrival process with a rate of lambda. So we need to figure out what our arrival process is into our second queue. Okay. And so we're going to try and calculate the PDF for the departure process for node 1, because obviously the departure process for node 1 is the arrival process for node 2. Okay. So, again, if we think of our service time at node 1, then this is an exponentially distributed, and we have our EDF 4, that distribution. It's just based on the service rate. Okay. And we're going to be doing a lot of summing through the summing of variables through the and, through the course of this lecture. So usually we're going to throw things into the Laplace transform where we can do that relatively easily. So we take the Laplace transform of that. And we have, again, a Laplace transform representation of the inter-arrival PDF. Okay. So what we want, again, is this to know what's the what the distribution of the inter-departure times is. And to do that, we're going to have to look at two cases. The case where the queue is empty. In that case, you're going to have to wait for an arrival plus a service time to get a departure. And the case where the queue is not empty. If the queue is not empty, then you just have to wait the service time for the next departure. Okay, so we have a departure, and we assume that we have something else waiting. Then, again, we just have to, the distribution on the conditional distribution on the service time is just our exponential distribution. Okay. If we have a departure and there's nobody waiting, then we need to wait for an arrival. Now we use the memory of this property and say, well, the distribution on the arrival is still exponential rate lambda, even at the point of departure. That's what the memoryless process says. So our distribution is dependent on the sum of our arrival, inter-arrival time, and our service time. Take a sum in the time domain, and that's a product in the Laplace domain. Okay. So now we just need to wait our two, so these are both conditional distributions. We can weight them according to the probability of each event, either a queue not empty or a queue empty. And we know that that's the total distribution. It can only be in one state or the other. And so the probability of the queue not empty is rho. Okay. And the probability that the queue is empty, so that you're in state zero, is 1 minus rho. So those are the results from last week. Okay. So you can just plug all of that in, and it's quite interesting. What you get out is a Laplace transform of your exponential distribution. So that means that the departures are behaving exponentially with a rate of lambda. And again, we're feeding that into the next queue. So the stream going into the next queue is exponential with a rate of lambda. Okay, so that's you know, not probably entirely obvious, but it does fall out of the mathematics. Okay. So that is the basis of what's called Burke's theorem. Okay, and what Burke's theorem essentially says is that if you have these networks of queues, they all behave as MM either 1 or MMC queues. Okay, so they all behave independently as some sort of MM, yeah, we'll just call it 1 just to be simple, Q. Okay. Okay, so again, what that means is that in our networks, all of the traffic flows are Poisson. And so we saw this for, again, a very simple case where all of the network was, or all of the traffic was feeding from one queue to the other. But we can also sum these streams, and if we're careful, we can split the streams as well. Okay. And so then we get this collection of queues. They're all independent. What we have to do some work to do is figure out exactly what the rates into the queue are, or what the rate into the queue is. But once we have that, then we can treat them all independently. So, again, we had our simple example, and we convinced ourselves of this. But if you think about, again, what we've done, or how we can sort of expand that, again, if these departures are Poisson, if you combine Poisson streams, the combination is still Poisson, the rate is the sum. You can also split them randomly. Okay. So you can have, you can specify that you have some probability of going in one direction and the rest of the probability in going in some other direction. Again, as long as that's random, then, again, the split is random, with the rates, again, just being weighted according to the probability of going in one direction or another. Okay. So, what we need to do, then, is to try and figure out what are the rates entering into the queues. Once you have the rates entering into the queues, you have the rate, well, it's cyclical, the rates entering into the queues give you the rates exiting the queues, so they all feed around to each other. And if we know these rates, again, we know from Burke's theorem that these are all acting as MM1 or C queues. Okay, and so again, this gives us a much simpler, a quite simple way of determining the distribution, the steady state distribution in the system. Again, the queues are independent, So the probability that N1 has I customers and N2 has J customers, Q1 has I customers and Q2 has J customers is just the product of their individual probabilities, which, again, we calculated last time. And you can recover sort of a marginal distribution or the distribution for a single Q in the usual way. Okay, so the main restriction that makes Burke's theorem work is the lack of loops, and this acyclic condition is required, again, to retain the Poisson nature throughout the network. And just if you look at it just intuitively, the next example shows why that is the case, or why if you're not acyclic you have problems. Okay, so we can look at a really simple system with cycles. So you have a single node, and you've got arrivals externally, but with a very high probability, so we'll think of R being close to 1, it's going to cycle back, and then with a low probability, it'll exit the system. And the problem with that becomes that your arrivals and departures are now highly correlated, okay? Because once you have a departure, it's almost certain that you're going to have another arrival. Therefore, the feed into that node is no longer Poisson, okay? Because again, what Poisson says is that there cannot be any correlation within the system. Okay. So cycles are going to give us some problems. Okay. Now, as it turns out, again, if you make a few more assumptions, you can actually handle them relatively straightforward manner. Okay. So we're going to look at cyclic networks in a second, but we'll just consider a single example before we do this. Okay. So we have a very simple system, but again, two different things can happen. Packets enter at node 1, then with a probability of 0.2, they go to node 2 and then on to node 3 and out. With a probability then of 0.8, they go on directly to 3. Okay. We give an arrival rate into the system, or into node 1, of 100 packets per second. And then we have a mean service rate of 200 packets per second. Just mentioning that. Okay, I'll mention that in a minute. Okay, so we ask, what's the probability that packet does not experience queuing delay? And then what's the average delay for a packet? Okay. And these are easy enough to arrive at. You're going to have to sort of consider paths as cases. But then we can, but then beyond that, you can treat delays sort of individually. Okay, so we can use Burke's theorem. And so from Burke's theorem, we can decide what the arrival rate into each of the different nodes is. So again, that's from the external, so it's 100 packets per second. We're splitting off our Poisson our Poisson stream here, and 0.2 of the stream goes here, so you have 0.2 times the arrival rate in is 0.2 times 100. All of it, all of the original 100 has to then go to 3, so you have another 100. Okay. Knowing the rates in, you can calculate rho. And the probability that you don't experience a queue at any given node then is going to be 1 minus rho. Okay. So that's, again, that's just treating each of these as an independent MM1 queue. And so then you just have to consider the paths over which you might travel. And so you always all packets go through Q1, so you have the probability of going through node 1. Then 0.2, or 20% of the time, they'll go through node 2 and 3. Or 0.8, or 80% of the time, they go solely through node 3. And so that gives you your probability of encountering no delay. So whichever way you go, you have to, all of the nodes have to be empty. Okay, so plugging in, you get a number. Okay, so the second question was, what's the average delay we're going to encounter? And we can determine that by examining the delay for each queue separately. We can calculate the delay for each queue separately. And then again, just consider the likelihood of taking one path over another. Okay. So, again, for an MM1 queue, the delay is 1 over mu minus lambda. So we can calculate that for all three queues. We know what mu and lambda are. And so, again, the delay, we always go through Q1. 0.2, with the probability of 0.2, we go through 2 and 3. And then with probably 0.8, we go through 3 only. So, again, that falls out fairly quickly. Okay. So, as a note, you can get the same result by applying Little's Law to the whole network. Okay. So, to do that, we would consider the rate in, and then the number, the average delay in each queue to give you the sort of the average number of customers in each queue or packets in each queue, which will give you if you sum those, you get the total number of packets in the network. Okay. If you know the total number of packets, you know the arrival rate, Little's Law will give you, again, the delay. Okay. So, again, we know the average number in each queue. By summing that, you get the average number in the system overall. And remember what Little's Law said was you just essentially draw a box around the system at any, and then just if you can figure out the flow in and the number stored in the system, then you get the delay out. Okay. So in this case, you have your average number in system is 2.11, and divide that by the rate in to get the delay. And you see it's the same as before. So that's just, again, two different ways of approaching the same problem. Okay, so one thing I forgot to mention, again, we asserted that, again, our splits were random. Okay. And that our service times are independent. Now, this is actually, in reality, not quite true. If you think about routing is usually not a random process. It's not that, everybody, whenever somebody arrives, you flip a coin. It's dependent on sort of preset algorithms. But the argument that's used is that if you have enough sort of flows coming in, sort of enough traffic, then it can be, the routing can look fairly random. The other thing is that the service times are not actually totally uncorrelated. Obviously, the service times are tied to packet lengths, so a packet doesn't change its length between one queue and the next. But again, the argument is that if you have enough packets, they'll look sufficiently random. So just a note that those assumptions are deviating a bit from reality, but in practice, if you've got a big enough system, they tend to work out. Okay, so the next question is, what can we do about cycles within the network? And again, if we have cycles, we've lost this Poisson, we've lost the Poisson representation, and they become therefore difficult to analyze. Okay, so generally you can frame the problem as a multidimensional Markov chain, with interdependent state distributions, but again, that's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult to grind through. Okay. Again, what we'll do is we'll set up, we'll impose a few additional assumptions, and for networks that adhere to these assumptions, then we'll actually get something that appears to be independent and Poisson. Okay. So we have K nodes. Each will have some number of servers, so again, it doesn't have to be one, it can be more than one. And we assume, again, we have infinite length FIFO queues. We are, again, having arrivals externally, and then departures eventually from the network. Okay. Now, here is our big assumption. We assume that if we can have cycles, but if a customer goes in, they have to leave. Okay, so they may cycle it around for quite a while, but eventually everything that goes in leaves as well. Now, this should really, I think, would be clear if we said external arrivals are Poisson with some rate gamma I. So if we have an arrival from outside the system to node I, then it's a Poisson distribution with rate gamma I. And so we assume that our service times are exponentially distributed according to how the node can service, so mu I. And that the service times are independent at each station it visits. So again, that's a little bit dodgy in terms of reality, but if you have big enough systems, it works. Okay. So, as before, we're going to assume that if a customer exits, then there's some probability of going, if you can split the stream to go to different nodes, and we just notationally say that the probability of exiting node I and going to node J is Rij, so R for routing, so it's a routing probability. So there has to be some arrival rate into a node that says nothing about the distribution, just the rate. And we're going to say it's lambda I. And therefore, the rate of arrivals from a node I to a node J is Ri J times lambda I. So the rate in has to equal the rate out, and that's being split according to the routing probabilities. So that just means those are rates. We're not saying anything about distributions. Okay. So the last thing, obviously, that can happen is that we said customers can go in, they move around the network, The last thing that happens is they can exit, and we denote the probability that a customer leaves from node I as RI 0. So it's just, you know, the probability that they're going out. Okay, so that's all notation. And so again, we have customers entering in a Poisson fashion at certain rates, and then they're moving around the system at a rate which is dependent on the rate at which they're departing, which is the rate at which they arrived, times our routing probabilities, which are splitting them across multiple possible routes. Finally, they exit the system. Okay. So, what we would like to do is say something about, to be able to calculate these lambdas. And so, in order to do that, we're going to just make a few observations. The first one is that the flow into the network is equal to the flow out of the network. Okay, that's our assumption, that everything that goes in eventually leaves. Okay, so the flow in is just the sum of gamma i's. The flow out is the sum of ri 0 times lambda I. The second is that the flow in and out of nodes also balances. Okay. So, you know, it's steady state. We're not... everything that goes into the node exits, and obviously can't exit faster than it enters. So that gives you the balance. Okay, so we can convert that to a matrix notation. And so we have lambda equals gamma plus lambda times r. And we can then try and solve for lambda. Okay. Okay, so just lambda is obviously the vector of all of our rates into our nodes. Gamma is the rates, the external rates into the nodes. And R is the matrix of routing probabilities. R I 0 is just, well, again, you either exit the node to another node within the network, or you exit the node to the outside, so it's 1 minus essentially the probability that you're going somewhere in the network. Okay, so again, you can solve it by isolating lambda, so you have gamma I minus r to the minus 1 with the inverse of I minus r. Okay, so that gives you your rates. So what we'd like to do is move from just having the rates to actually having the equilibrium state probabilities for the network. Okay. And so for Jackson networks, which again now we're dropping to single server nodes, it turns out that our probabilities appear as a probability of being in any state is again appears as the probabilities as if you were in an as if you had MM1 queues. Okay. So again, despite the fact we know things are not actually MM, the probability of being in any state appears as if it was MM. Okay, so again, it appears as if each node is operating independently with the usual probabilities of being in any given state. Okay. So what that means is that things are the actual picture is more complicated. We're just stating this. We're not proving it. Let's see. I think the reference that's given, if you're interested in the proof, is it Gross and Harris, I think? The proof is in the book. But, we'll just accept it that it works. Okay, so again, what this means is that we can calculate our usual network statistics as we did before. So the number in the queue can be calculated according to rho. The delay can be calculated as the difference, or 1 over mu minus lambda. And so you can sum up the number of customers overall in the network, and the mean delay for the customers, for a customer, is just given, again, by Little's law, as n over lambda. Okay, where lambda has got to be the total arrival rate, so the sum of the gammas. Okay. So again, what this means is that the work in addressing these problems comes in trying to determine what your lambda is. Okay. So, just again, a simple example. We have the network as below. So we see we do have a cycle in this network. They have the same service rate, 200 packets per second, as before. The traffic entering as before is 100 packets per second, and now we have slightly different probabilities of going up and down. So 70% probability you go from 1 to 3, and which means a 30% probability you go from 1 to 2, and then from 2 with a 20% probability you go back to 1, and once you're in 2 you have to go back to 1. Once you're in 3, let's see, where's, yeah, once you're in 3 with a 20% probability you go back to 2, and with a 80% probability you exit the network. Okay. So we ask, what's the average delay for a packet to go through the network? And what's the maximum arrival rate at node 1 for which the system is stable? Okay, so what that means is that however the packets are traveling through the nodes, you can't at any point have more packets arriving than you can handle. So your arrival rate can't be greater than your service rate. Okay. So, again, you get the R will be your routing matrix. So again, once you're in 2, you, for instance, have to go back to 1. When you're in 1, you either go to 2 or 3, and when you're in 3, you either go back to 2 or exit, so the exits aren't represented in here. Okay, so gamma, everybody is going into 1. So, again, we have our lambda is gamma plus lambda r, and solving that for lambda, we get our gamma I minus r inverse, and I'm hoping that you guys have actually inverted matrices a lot more recently than I have, but there's a number of ways of doing it, and just the ones that Connor suggested was just the sort of a very mechanical way. For any matrix, its inverse is given by its either adjoint or adjacent matrix divided by the the determinant of the matrix. Okay, so we have I minus R. So I is 1, then minus R. And so to find the adjacent, you first take the cofactors, and again, if you don't know how to do it, look it up. And then take the transpose of that cofactor matrix, okay, and that gives you the adjoint matrix or the adjacent. And then you can calculate the determinant, and so that gives you your inverse. Excuse me. If you multiply your inverse times gamma, then you get lambda. Okay. And so again, since everything arrived to node I, we're essentially picking off our first row here. Okay. So what we have here then again is the arrival rate into the system, into each of the given nodes, so into node 1, node 2, and node 3. You have the service rate, therefore you can find row, and you can calculate the average delays then, okay, in the way that we sketched out before. You calculate the number of customers waiting at each, the number of customers waiting at each node. And then you sum them all, so that gives you the number of customers in the system overall, and you divide that by the arrival rate to the system to give delay, a la Little's Law. Okay. So that gives you the delay in the system. That was our first question. The second one was, what is our maximum arrival rate so that the system is stable? Well, again, assuming they're all coming to I, we're going to our arrival rate is just going to be gamma 1 times each of the quantities in our first row. And what we need is that, again, the arrival rates always have to be less than the service rate. If you arrive here, if you've got more coming in than you can serve, then you're in trouble. Okay. So obviously the biggest arrival rate is when we're multiplying by 1.7857. And so if you, so your 200 is your service rate, and if you divide that by 1.7857, the maximum you can have for stability is 112 packets per second. Okay. So, again, it's a body of results relating to networks of queues. So, you know, what you would find again in sort of multi-hop networking systems. And so you do have to make some assumptions which, you know, again, that you may or may not be terribly realistic in terms of the service rates and the independence of the various portions of the system. Again, there's lots of arguments about it. Again, if the system's big enough and enough the traffic sources going into it, that these assumptions are not unreasonable. So we can take a break. Now, we'll take our usual 15-20 minute break, and we'll return and deal with our second topic, which is now looking at what we can say if we no longer have a Poisson service discipline. So again, what we're losing is our memoryless property. And so how can we deal with these sorts of systems. So we'll do that again when we come back. And it's probably about roughly the same length, so we'll probably finish a little early. Okay, so I'll see you guys again in 15 or 20 minutes.